Whoever said long ago that movie theaters were the new cathedrals was right. Audiences like liturgies. They like trooping into large, umbrageous buildings where everyone delivers the same responses and seeks to experience the same raptures. They await the awesome, the unintelligible, the transcendent. Instead of God, it is dinosaurs, space monsters, vampires, digimated swamp ogres. Whatever we cannot understand will make us strong. Nigel Andrews.
Welcome to the Quest Logo.
All right, here we go. Bonus episode time for Cinema Crespity. So how's it going? I'm your host, Chris Crespo, hanging out with Drew Sikogren. Drew, how's it going?
What up, bro?
Hey, dude. Doing another bonus episode for the people. And this one, we're doing a film school episode. It's been a minute since we've done one. What was the last one we did?
Some director or something.
Wasn't Quentin Tarantino. We did Coens after that. Was it the Coens?
Maybe.
I think it might have been. It might have been a Coens film.
Don't
go
remember.
Back. You can just go to chriscrespo.com and in the search bar, search Crespo Diesel Film School, and they'll all pop up. We got one on Chris Nolan, Martin Scorsese, Tarantino, Coens. We got one on the genre of horror, all sorts of things. This one we're doing summer blockbusters. In case you can tell by the title of the episode, Crespo Diesel Film School hyphen summer blockbusters.
It's not colon.
No. No. Do not make that mistake. So, yeah, well, that's going to be about the history of it. I'm not going to talk about every blockbuster that's come out in the last 40 years because I got stuff to do.
Be here forever.
But we'll be talking about how all this stuff began. As a matter of fact, what was Hollywood like before the blockbuster age? Because that only started in the mid-70s.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the exact point in a second. Before that, 50s and 60s, there were no... I mean, there were big movies, but, you know, movies like, even going back to the 30s, like Wizard of Oz, Gone with the Wind. There's always going to be big budget movies, big extravaganzas. In the 50s and 60s, a lot of those were westerns, musicals, things like that. A couple biblical things. But your traditional, you know, huge budgeted film, it wasn't the norm. Not at that time, especially in the 50s and 60s when television was super popular. Because, you know, that just started. People were entranced by the boob tube in all three of its channels. And that was enough to make, you know, get people away from movie theaters and have movie producers kind of freaking out a bit. So they had to find a way to combat that. That is what led to the New Hollywood, right? Now, New Hollywood is kind of born out of... It's a lot like French New Wave cinema of the 60s. New Hollywood started in the late 60s, goes into the early 80s, so there's some overlap. But that is when... the artists were given the keys of the kingdom. Mm-hmm. So instead of studio executives making all the decisions, businessmen making all the decisions, the people that were running the studios and getting movies made were people like Robert Redford and Dennis Hopper when they made Easy Rider, Scorsese, Brian De Palma, you know, Francis Ford Coppola. Something like Apocalypse Now was made outside of the traditional studio system, right?
Okay.
In that batch of people, your Scorsese's and your Coppola's and your De Palma's, all these people worked together. They all visited each other's film sets. Mm-hmm. And they all made pretty, you know, of the times, of the 70s, pretty much dour films. You know, not much optimism in those movies. In something like The Conversation or The Godfather or Carrie, you know, or The Fury, you know, stuff like that. But amongst that group of people was one guy who was a little interested in optimism in his movies. That was a little fella named Steven Spielberg.
Oh.
Right? They're all
tiny little man.
Tiny little guy.
Never even heard of this guy.
Maybe you at home might have heard of this dude. He may have had some influence in you in your life through his art. As well as another buddy of his, a little weirdo that was tagging around his nerd dude that people were like, who's this guy? That's a little guy named George Lucas.
Not a little man. Never heard of before.
And all these dudes were visiting each other's sets. You know, they're all hanging out. They're all talking. And around this time period, again, the blockbuster had not been... The term hadn't been invented. The summer blockbuster wasn't a thing. As a matter of fact, up until the mid-70s, the months of June, July, and August, totally considered a dead season for movies. At that time, the consensus, common knowledge or whatever, everyone figured during the summer, when schools are out and people are taking vacations, everyone's going to the beach. They're having barbecues. They're doing a lot of things outside. They're not going to the movies. The only time people really went to the movies in the summer was in the drive-ins, drive-in theaters. And even then, by the mid-70s, drive-in theaters were going away because they were being associated more with, like, seediness, you know. It was more about parking your car and trying to get lucky as opposed to watching a movie. You know, imagine a parking lot full of people just trying to get laid while a movie's playing. The Thing from Another World or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this guy, the Spielberg fellow, he somehow got himself attached to make the movie adaptation of the previous year's hugely popular book, Peter Benchley book, Jaws. 1974, that book came out. It was a huge smash. That was part of the reason why Jaws had any cachet to begin with, because the book came out first and the book was very popular. Mm-hmm. Sounds familiar. And when Spielberg started making the movie, you know, even though it had a budget of $4 million and went up to $9 million, it was way over budget. And, you know, tons of problems making the movie, production problems. When Universal saw what he was making and they started seeing dailies and stuff, they gained a lot of confidence, as they should have. And they did what no one else had done before, which is spend a shit ton of money on marketing. I think the technical term is a fuck ton.
Okay.
I think that's the metric, how you measure it. So, like, for example, they spent $700,000 on just TV advertising, which at that time was reaching 200 million homes. So that's still a lot of homes, even in the 70s, right? Almost $1 million worth of TV ads for Jaws, unheard of at that time. And they did a lot of stunt publicity. Like, you know now how the Avengers came out? So when you go to a 7-Eleven, you might see, like, a Hulk Sour Apple Slushy or Slurpee that you can then get in your Avengers cup. Uh-huh. What they did, they actually made some Jaws-themed ice cream flavors.
Okay.
Like Finilla, Jawberry, Sharklet. I wouldn't eat anything called Sharklet. It's too close to Charlotte, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So tons of anticipation, tons of buildup. Then what happened? June 20th, 1975, Jaws comes out in theaters, and people are lining up around the block, everywhere, all across, wherever the movie came out, in wide release, also the widest release at the time. People flooding the theaters, sold out, shows were sold out way in advance. And that is definitely considered the birth of the summer blockbuster. A movie that big had never been opened during those months, with so much advertising, and that hadn't been that successful. All those things came together to create something that made Hollywood studio executives be like, holy shit, we may have something here. Mm. We may actually have a formula that would work. As a matter of fact, the producer of the movie, David Brown, had admitted, quote, the release of the film was deliberately delayed till people were in the water off the summer beach resorts. So they knew. Making a movie about a shark terrorizing a beach town. Best time to release it? Summertime, when people are at beach towns and people are going to the beach and whatnot. So it's huge, obviously. It's Jaws. And I mean, it's a great movie. We all know Jaws, right? Although I have read about how people go to, like, movie screenings. You know how they show old movies in theaters all the time so people can see them. And people go in to see Jaws in a theater to enjoy it. And then there are hipster douche assholes in the audience that are, like, laughing at the fake shark or, you know, at Quit Dying. They're laughing at it ironically or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's a bunch of bullshit. People shouldn't be doing that to old movies. You should watch it through the context of time. If you can't do that, just stay home and keep playing Call of Duty. Because you have to... Because art's not going to come to you. You have to meet it somewhere. Right?
Right.
That was 75. Jaws. Big deal. Now, if Jaws was the only movie to come out that was like that, summer release, huge audiences, caused big waves throughout the American public, then the summer blockbuster probably wouldn't be a thing. You know, there has to be some sort of repetition. 2 years later, after Jaws, Spielberg puts out Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Huge science fiction movie. Hugely successful. Everyone loved it. Again, massive success. And it would have been the most popular science fiction film of that year if it wasn't for Star Wars. May 1977, Star Wars comes up. Mm-hmm. Relatively small budget. Made a ton of money. As a matter of fact, in 75, Jaws broke records and became the highest grossing film of all time. That title only lasted for 2 years when Star Wars became the highest grossing film of all time at that time. George Lucas then did something else with Star Wars that would become a staple of the blockbuster. Can you tell me what that is, Drew? Using your powers of deduction, what did George Lucas do with Star Wars that is now considered almost the end game or just assumed whenever a movie comes out?
Franchises.
1980, Empire Strikes Back. 1983, Return of the Jedi. All of those movies come out in May, mm-hmm. the very beginning of summer. And then set that pattern where... Even to this day, May is considered the official start of the summer movie season. Even though summer doesn't start till the end of May, Memorial Day, the very first weekend of May, that's considered, boom, summer movie season. That's why your Avengers movies all come out first week of May, and your Iron Mans and things like that. Very, very hugely important. Also, around the same time, other studios started getting on the action. They saw that they have potential to make huge movies and release them during the summer. So 1979, 2 years after Star Wars, 4 years after Jaws, mm-hmm. we have movies like Superman.
Okay.
Up until that point, Superman was very popular, but there hadn't been a big budget serious movie, you know, where, I mean, Superman the movie is pretty straight-faced. They strive for realism in that, you know, it's not campy or anything. It's not like a 60s Batman. Mm-hmm. Or the serialized Superman shorts of the 30s and 40s. It was something all its own. And that helped change the way comic book movies were made because they spent $10 million to get Marlon Brando and they put all this money into it. And something that was supposed to be campy was instead treated with seriousness became hugely popular. Also in 79, mm-hmm. Star Trek, the motion picture.
Okay.
By that point, Star Trek had been on TV for a little while. And again, it was considered, you know, low budget science fiction, thought driven, and definitely had its big fan base, but not fodder for... a feature film. But then the Star Trek motion picture comes out. Very successful. How many of those? They made like 15 of those things by now.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they're cranking out the Star Treks. So that showed that not only with comic books, but with genre TV shows, you could turn those into the big movies, release them during the summer, and make some money. Also showing that not all family movies have to be Disney-fied or cartoons or whatever. The Muppet movie came out in 79, mm-hmm. summer of 79. Mm-hmm. That's an awesome summer. Superman, Star Trek, the Muppet movie?
Yeah. I mean, that hits them all, too.
Right. That hits all the quadrants. And then in 1980, not to be outdone, a little $3 million comedy came out in the summer, July 1980. Movie with an exclamation point at the end, a film called Airplane!
Oh!
Because the exclamation point, you gotta shout it. Only cost $3 million to make, made $83 million, became one of the highest grossing comedies of all time by then, and again, showing comedies are fodder for making your big budget summer blockbuster film. By the way, you should be playing the blockbuster summer blockbuster drinking game right now. So every time I said blockbuster, you should be drinking. So just keep that in mind.
What?
Now, when it comes to your movie pack summers, one summer stands above the rest. So that includes up to current 2015. There has never been a summer as good as 1982. Which is easy to say with hindsight. We can look back and see all the great movies that came out. But 1982, here's a little list of the movies that came out that summer. E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Oh, man.
Spielberg coming back to reclaim his crown. The Thing. Rocky III, introducing the world to Hulk Hogan and Mr. T. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. the best of all those Star Trek movies. Conan the Barbarian, starring Schwarzenegger's career, another guy who would go on to make many summer blockbuster films, one coming out pretty soon here, Terminator Genesis, probably going to be terrible. Blade Runner came out that summer. Poltergeist came out that summer. Hey, Poltergeist came out this summer. They had it better in 82. Tron came out. That's a good one. As well as another, The Road Warrior came out in 1982. That's ridiculous. That lineup of movies is insane. E.T., Rocky III, Star Trek II, Conan the Barbarian, Blade Runner, Poltergeist, Tron, The Road Warrior. Are you kidding me? I can't imagine seeing so many great movies in a row like that.
Yeah.
And then around 83, 84, you also had, I think it was 84, Spielberg, not to be outdone by Lucas with his Star Wars movies, was like, I want to make my own super sweet franchise. Raiders of the Lost Ark. Boom. 84. Back to the Future in 85, Ghostbusters 84, Red Dawn in 84 with the first PG-13 film. So yeah, 82, early 80s, that was huge. Then around that same time, that whole new Hollywood thing, with all the auteurs, that was dying off, because that's when all those people were finally given enough rope to hang themselves. So you have movies like Heaven's Gate that cost way too much money, made nothing back, and finished the career of Michael Cimino, who before that, he was mega popular with The Deer Hunter and stuff like that.
Deer Hunter was good.
Deer Hunter was great. And then he made Heaven's Gate, which is an interesting movie. Has good parts to it, but it's also 4 hours long and features one scene during a wedding. There's like a 20-minute wedding. And during the wedding, there's a 5-minute fiddle solo with the guy on roller skates. The guy's on roller skates playing the fiddle for 5 minutes straight. So, you know, that guy had a little too much power. But that happens. That happens sometimes with these movies. Now, we can see it to this day, just from 75 to 82, all those movies, all those things came out, changed the way now we see movies today. For example, the franchising of films.
Yeah.
Lucas made 3 Star Wars movies, they're all hugely popular. Now when a movie comes out, the automatic question is, when's the sequel coming out?
Yeah.
It's rare when a movie comes out intended to be a one-off, like Inception. Chris Nolan made Inception. What was that, 2010? And made $800 million worldwide. Everyone loved it. So people were like, hey, Nolan, when's Inception 2 coming? Is it a prequel? Is it a sequel? What's the deal? And he was like, no,
that's it.
That's it.
That's everything, bro. Yeah, I'm not. There's.
No, we made a little.
No sequel. You don't even know how the fucking movie ends.
Yeah, we put out a little comic book that tells you what happened right before Inception. But that's all you're getting, guys. I'm making a Batman movie, and then I'm making the space thing, and you guys aren't going to remember Inception in a few years. You know, it's almost like when Watchmen came out in 2009. Of course, people were like, "Well, are they going to find a way to make more?" You know, and DC did end up making Watchmen prequel comics.
Yeah, I don't know how good they were. Yeah, I didn't really get into them, but
I didn't bother looking.
I'll tell you what, the covers looked really cool.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, they got Dave Gibbons back to do all the artwork. So, of course, at least the covers are going to look proper, right? But, anyway, tangent. So, one of the biggest things that happened with the blockbuster was simultaneously a blessing and a curse, depending on how you look at it. With these movies coming out, studios are trying to maximize profits. Also, trying to do that were the exhibitors, the movie theater owners, who they have a group. All the theater owners have a national organization, and they decided to call themselves NATO.
Seriously?
The National Association of Theater Owners. Yep, they're called NATO. So whenever I see movie trailers debuting at a NATO conference, I'm always like, wait a second, what? Oh, that's right. Those idiots. Now, up until going into the 80s, your typical movie theater had about 2 screens. Maybe it was a single screen theater, maybe it was a 2-screen theater. You go to the theater, you see what movie they're playing. They're only playing one movie. You don't want to see that movie, you're not going to that theater. Especially in places like New York and LA, where there were way more theaters. Movie theater exhibitors are like, well, wait a second. What if we make bigger theaters with more screens?
Uh-oh.
Oh, shit. Bigger theaters with more screens. Big theaters with more screens. Summer blockbuster. Drew Skyburn versus the World. Drew, what year did Jaws come out?
What was that, like, 79? I'm sure you already said it. I'm really not paying that much attention.
Yeah, 75.
Sure, you see?
75. What year did E.T. the Thing and Rocky III come out?
No, we just talked about that, and I totally don't remember what year it was.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
$700,000 worth of TV advertising was bought for which film?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Man, oh man, oh man. So, the Megaplex was born.
Okay, Megaplex.
Theater exhibitors were like, we need to find a way to show more movies. So that's when they started coming up with the Megaplex, the Multiplex. And it started with something as small as a 6-screen theater. And then 8-screen theaters and 10-screen theaters started becoming enormous as we got into the 90s. Also, these larger theaters were popping up in shopping malls and large, like, the outdoor shopping complexes. Because those were booming at the same time as well. And movie theaters helped malls and suburban shopping centers to explode because they became like an anchor. Mm-hmm. Like anchor stores, you had an anchor movie theater. At least people were coming out to see the movies and they would go wander into the mall and do some shopping. You make a day out of it when malls were much more popular. This is before the internet, kids, when you had to go out, you had to leave your home to buy stuff. You couldn't just do it all at home in your underwear. And I mean, now, what's the Regal over here? The Winter Park Regal.
What about it?
It's the Regal 20.
Yes.
20 fucking screens over there.
Yeah. I mean, in Sarasota, I remember when the big multiplex, the Hollywood 20 came out. It was the Regal.
Hollywood 20.
The Regal Hollywood 20.
20 damn screens.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And it was a good thing that these theaters came out because with more screens, theaters could show more movies. With there being more space for more movies, that means more opportunities for more movies to come out. So, for example, over here at the Winter Park 20, they have 20 screens. That means throughout the year, they can afford to take their smallest screen and play a Werner Herzog documentary on there for a week or two.
Nice.
Or they could, a foreign film. They can use their smaller screens that are all the way in the back, and they can show movies that are a little more off the beaten path. Except during the summer when the blockbusters come out, and Avengers is on 5 screens, and Mad Max is on 4 screens, and Pitch Perfect is on 4 screens, and there's already over half your theaters gone with just 3 movies, right? But that's only a summer problem. Now, while that's great, a problem with the multiplexes is that before that, your movie theater was much more like, imagine a Broadway theater or go into a performing arts center.
Mm-hmm.
You had ushers that were dressed nice and then bellhops. Everyone was dressed to the nines. You got personalized service. It was much more of a going out type of thing. Now you go to the movie theater, it's a type of job. It's like you either work at fast food or you work in a movie theater. Mm-hmm. It's your first job. It's a bunch of teenagers there. They don't really know what they're doing. They're trying their best. They're teenagers, but I mean, come on, it's not the same type of service. You don't get, you know, a person walking into your seat with a flashlight and like, here you go, this is where you go. It's every man for himself.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of places that are immaculately kept and cleaned, now the sticky floor is the common joke about movie theaters. So the multiplexes, they were great for some reasons, but they're also kind of shitty for others. Also, when the multiplexes opened up in suburbia, the downtown movie theaters, your traditional movie theaters, were closing because they couldn't compete and they couldn't afford the raising rent of being a theater in a city.
Mm-hmm.
So now when you see a theater that's like in a city space, it's almost like, whoa, this is out of place. This is weird. It used to be the norm. It used to be the way it is. And speaking of sequels, I found an interesting quote from Mr. Spielberg. Because Jaws is amazing. Everyone loves it. Of course, Universal wanted Jaws 2.
Mm-hmm.
And Spielberg was like, I ain't doing it. That first shoot was hell. I'm not doing it again. They ended up making Jaws 2, 3, and 4 over time. Each one getting worse and worse and worse. And after Jaws 3, the fact that Jaws 4 is worse than Jaws 3 is It's really a feat. It's really incredible. Mm-hmm. Spielberg said, "In my hands, Jaws 2, 3, and 4, if I had made them, still would have failed because of the improbability of a shark that large occurring thrice. The audience will only accept so much until it becomes hooey." So even he knew about the law of diminishing returns, which you'd think that he would take his own advice when he came around to the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, but that's another conversation. So now the blockbuster is a thing. The summer movies come out during the summer. And actually now the summer has expanded to include movies in April because we have stuff like the Fast and Furious movies come out in April. The last one, Furious 7, came out in April. Grossed over $100 million opening weekend. First film to ever do that in the month of April. Last year, Guardians of the Galaxy came out in August. Opened over $100 million. First August film to ever do that. Mm. So your summer parameters are now widening. Next year, towards the end of March, is when we're getting Batman v Superman : Department of Justice.
Sweet. I'm really looking forward to that, Department of Justice.
And that is going to be the first film to open over $100 million in March. It's going to shatter March records. Mm-hmm. And your summer movie season is going to be a couple months early because that's a summer movie. But they didn't want to go head-to-head with Captain America Civil War.
Captain America :
Civil War.
Civil War, no Spider-Man.
Three.
Captain America : Civil War, no Spider-Man 3.
Because even though they say that that's going to be... They insist it's going to be a Captain America movie. Captain America 3.
Sure it is.
But it's looking like Avengers 3.
Well, Captain America 3. If it's the Civil War, it's not only going to be Avengers, but they're going to drag in as many goddamn Marvel characters as they can.
They are. There are more characters in that movie than you can shake a stick at. It's ridiculous. So now, summer movie season has widened. And another big change, we'll finish off with this, another big change outside of how now your movies are coming out in April and earlier and earlier and earlier. The blockbuster has allowed Hollywood, the studios, to regain their control on the system.
Yes.
By that, I mean, in the 50s and 60s, they controlled everything. They had a huge chunk of the market share. But then they were going bankrupt. They were running out of money. So that's when New Hollywood came about. Little, you know, all the artists came up with their own production companies. They were releasing their own movies. Awesome movies of 70s and 80s. And I have some numbers here. Real quick numbers, guys. This is actually some interesting stuff if you pay attention. Throughout the 80s, the combined share of the six surviving major studios had fallen to 64% by 86. So in 1986, almost just over half the movies were from the major studios. The lowest it had been since the days of silent film. At that time, two studios, Orion and TriStar. Remember TriStar? Yeah, that was the one with the, what was that, a unicorn? It was a Pegasus.
Yeah, it was the Pegasus. TriStar was the Pegasus, and then Columbia with the lady, and then it was Columbia TriStar, where there was both.
Right, because Columbia, they absorbed them. And then Orion was that L that popped up over the...
Yeah, that was... Orion was very 80s. That Orion logo, I only see on movies in the mid-afternoon, or movies on VHS that I don't have anymore.
From the 80s.
Yes.
And the reason why it stopped... because they went bankrupt. But it happens when you try to, you know, make it at this movie business. Orion and TriStar combined in 86 had 6% of the market share. Disney had 10%. No. They weren't considered one of the six majors by that point. Because now forget about it. Now it's Disney. Now they rule the world. New Line had just started. New Line really got started with the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, Freddy Krueger. By 86... they had 13% of the market share. So New Line was blowing up in the 80s. It wasn't until the 90s, after a bunch of corporate mergers and shit like that, corporate acquisitions, you know, Sony getting Columbia, things like that, MGM, you know, all that shit. That's when it started turning back around finally for the studios. Orion went bankrupt in 92. TriStar merged with Columbia in 98. New Line merged with Warner Brothers in 2008. So by 2006, your six major movie companies had 89% of the market share in North America.
Oh, wow.
So almost every movie that came out then had a Warner Brothers logo or a Universal logo. The two largest independent studios by 2006 were Lionsgate and the Weinstein Company, which shared 6%. MGM only had 1.8%. Really, MGM's more of a library now.
Yeah.
And all the other studios combined, all the remaining independent studios, stuff like your Paramount Vantage and Focus features, right? 2.3%. That's it. So, blockbusters are great. Huge money makers. A lot of fun to watch these huge movies, all these special effects. But also adds a little to the homogenization of the marketplace. You know,
really?
It's harder to get some of those movies.
Little
now.
Guys, like the Focus features and the Annapurnas, that's only...
Well, that's as of 2006. Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a slight uptick in the last couple years.
In the last 5 years or so, I think there's been more of a resurgence of the small production companies getting away from these, you know, big budget studio nonsense.
I would like to see some updated numbers regarding A24 and Annapurna, even something like Skydance, which they're like Annapurna's commercial brother.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, quite literally, Annapurna started by Megan Ellison, Skydance started by David Ellison.
Ah, yes, literally.
Brother and sister.
Yeah.
They took their Larry Ellison Oracle billions or millions that they were given, and they both started their own movie companies. Annapurna's the one with all the style and substance.
Mm-hmm.
Skydance is the one that's all franchises. Like, for example, Skydance is doing Terminator Genesis.
Okay, right? Gotcha.
Stuff like that.
So it's like you said, the commercial wing, the art wing.
Yeah, and I would love to see the numbers now. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe did uptick to like 5%, but even then, your Universal, Warner Brothers, etc., that would still be over 80%. And I wouldn't even, I wonder, it doesn't say here if that includes Disney now, because now Disney owns, they have it all. They're massive, they're ridiculous,
they own,
they're insane. Can't get away from them now.
No,
it's pretty incredible.
Like, name a giant movie that's coming out. Guarantee you Disney's probably got something to do with it.
Disney's behind it somehow these days, it seems. So, summer blockbusters. They're great, but also terrible.
Awful.
But they're great.
I hate them. And I love them.
Yeah. It's that thing. When I go see San Andreas, I hate it.
You're going to love to hate it.
But when I go see Mad Max Fury Road,
I love it.
Because that is a $125 Warner Brother picture right there.
Oh, that is only $125. That's all.
It's estimated between $100 and $150. The original budget was $100. Rumors are I got up to $150. I split it down the middle. I call it $125. Makes sense,
sweet,
right? The power of deduction. Yeah. Summer blockbusters. Are you drunk yet? You should be hammered.
Nope.
So there you go.
This city.
It's
full of blockbusters.
Full of blockbusters. Your quick history on the summer blockbuster now. When people start talking about these big movies, you have a little information under your belt. You can impress them at parties when you talk about how Jaws came out in 75 and George Lucas franchised movies for the first time, really. And really show people how that can be done. And multiplexes and its contribution to suburban sprawl and stuff like that.
Sweet.
Yeah, those are cocktail conversations.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
So there you go, guys. Film school over. You are dismissed. Everyone go home, relax, have a good time. Go watch some movies. Drew, thanks.
Peace.
And email cinemacrespiso@gmail.com, Twitter @crespiso, Facebook and Instagram cinemacrespiso. Support R-rated movies, as well as the independents and your foreign films and your documentaries and your Werner Herzog films. Go see those as well.